The sound of a paint failure isn't a loud one, but it's the kind of noise that settles right in the pit of your stomach because it represents the slow, silent death of a structure. It's that dry, papery crinkle when you run your hand over a window casing, or the hollow, crisp snap when a flake finally gives up its ghost and hits the driveway. If you're standing outside looking at your siding and you see those edges curling like old parchment, you aren't just looking at an aesthetic problem. You are looking at an open door. Every one of those curls is a neon sign inviting moisture to crawl behind the film, soak into the grain, and turn your home back into mulch. If you just slap a fresh coat of high-dollar latex over those peeling edges, you're gift-wrapping a rot sandwich. Within 6 months, the physics of expansion and contraction will win, and that expensive new paint will bubble, heave, and pull away, taking the old layer with it. You'll be right back where you started, only poorer, more frustrated, and with wood that's one step closer to the landfill. The failure isn't in the paint itself. It's in the transition, the microscopic cliff edge where the old paint meets the bare wood. I'm reaching into my pocket right now and pulling out a single piece of common sidewalk chalk. It's dusty, light, and looks like something a kid dropped on the driveway. But in about 15 minutes, this is going to be the only thing standing between you and a total system failure. For now, I'm setting it on the top of the ladder. We aren't ready for it yet. We have to earn the right to use that chalk by going through the surgical snap phase. I remember a job I did about 15 years ago, a beautiful old Victorian with gingerbread trim that had been neglected for a decade. I was in a hurry to get the finished coat on because the weather was turning, and I told myself that a good heavy-bodied primer would hide the fact that I hadn't spent enough time feathering the edges. I scraped the loose stuff, sure, but I didn't sand back the transitions until they were smooth to the touch. I painted it, and it looked like $1 million for the first month. Then, the first hard freeze hit. By spring, the house looked like it was shedding its skin in giant, embarrassing sheets. I had to go back on my own dime, strip it all the way down, and do the work I should have done the first time. That was the year I learned that paint is only as strong as the bond beneath it. You can't hide a structural failure with a liquid. When you're up on that ladder, you need to be listening for the surgical snap. Take a heavy, stiff-bladed scraper with a replaceable carbide edge, none of those flexible putty knives, and pull it across a peeling area. If the paint is truly failing, it comes off with a sharp, high-pitched tink as the brittle film shatters away from the wood. If the sound is dull, or if you're just gouging into the wood without the paint popping off, stop. You've reached sound paint. You aren't trying to win a fight with the wood. You're just removing the passengers that are no longer holding on. You're feeling the vibration of the blade. If the tool starts chattering, you're holding it too steep. You want a smooth, steady draw at 45 degrees. Every few feet, you run your bare hand over the area. It should feel rough, like heavy grit sandpaper, but you shouldn't feel any loose edges that catch your fingernails. If you can slide your nail under an edge and lift it, that paint is still failing, and you need to keep going. Look at the boards. If your house was built before 1978, those bottom layers are likely lead-based. This isn't a suggestion, it's a survival protocol. Lead paint doesn't just peel, it alligators, breaking into small square scales like reptile skin. If you see that pattern, the rules of the game change instantly. No power sanding, no dry scraping that creates dust clouds. You wet scrape. You drape heavy plastic 4 feet out from the foundation. And you treat every flake like it's toxic. You're 6 feet up on a ladder, managing a scraper in one hand and 3 points of contact. If you feel yourself reaching too far to catch one last flake, stop. Climb down. Move the ladder. Most accidents happen in that last 6 inches of reach because of ego. Once you've scraped back to a solid edge, you're left with the topography of failure. you have a patch of bare wood surrounded by a cliff of old paint. This cliff is the enemy. If you paint over it, the shadow of the edge will show through, and the tension of the new paint drying will pull at that cliff, causing it to lift. You have to feather. You take 60 grit paper, and you sand that sharp edge down until it's a gentle slope. When you run your fingers from the bare wood toward the old paint, you shouldn't feel a bump. It should feel like one continuous smooth surface. You're looking at the wood grain now. Gray, weathered wood is turning into a bright, fresh tan. That fresh wood is thirsty. Now, I'm picking up that piece of sidewalk chalk from the top of the ladder. I'm rubbing it over the transition area where I just sanded, right where the wood meets the old paint. Look at what happens. The chalk highlights every remaining ridge and loose bit that my eyes missed in the bright sun. If the chalk catches and leaves a heavy, jagged line, I still have a cliff. If the chalk leaves a smooth, even dusting, I've feathered it correctly. The white on white of old paint is a lie. The chalk is the truth. It shows me exactly where the physical transition is still too abrupt. I wipe the chalk dust off with a damp rag and wait. You never ever prime damp wood. You're just trapping a ticking time bomb of steam that will blow your paint off the next time the sun hits the siding. As I apply the primer, a high-quality oil-based exterior primer, I listen for the hiss. The bristles of the brush should hiss as they push the liquid into the grain. If it sounds like you're sliding a squeegee over glass, the wood isn't drinking. You either have moisture in the boards, or a layer of mill glaze you didn't sand through. I feel the brush start to drag or pull back against my hand as the oils soak in. That resistance is the sound of a bond forming. I follow the shade around the house, avoiding direct sunlight. The sun will bake the surface of the primer before the bottom has a chance to soak in, leading to skinning. Look at the grain again. If you see vertical cracks or checks running through the boards, do not caulk them. Caulk is for joints where two different pieces of wood meet. If you put caulk in a check, it will fail because the board is trying to expand across its width. Let the primer soak deep into those checks. Let the wood move. If you fight the wood's natural movement with rigid fillers, the wood will win every time. If you find a spot where the wood feels soft, like you can push your thumbnail in and it doesn't spring back, the repair is over. You've found rot. No amount of wood hardener is a permanent solution for structural siding. The board has to come out. A real mentor knows you don't paint over a lie. You replace the board, prime all six sides, including the back and the end cuts, and then you install it. Most people forget to prime the end cuts, which is exactly where the moisture wicks in to start the peeling cycle again. The top coat is just the uniform. The prep is the skeleton. When you lay that first stroke of finish color over your feathered patches, it should disappear. If you can still see the outline of where you scraped, you failed the sanding stage. If the texture is perfectly uniform, you've erased the history of the failure. You walk away from that wall with a specific kind of confidence, knowing that when the next thunderstorm rolls through, your house is sealed. You hear the rain hitting the siding, and instead of worrying, you just hear a solid, muffled thrum. But here's the reality most people won't tell you. Sometimes, you can do everything right. The scraping, the feathering, the oil-based priming, and the paint will still fail within a year because of what's happening inside your house. If you don't have a vapor barrier, or if your bathroom fan is venting directly into the wall cavity, you are literally pumping pressurized moisture into the back of your siding. You can spend $5,000 on the best paint in the world, but it won't hold if the wood is being drowned from the inside out. I've seen people spend weeks on their knees scraping a porch only to have it peel, because they didn't realize the ground moisture was rising up through the joists. I've seen homeowners blame the paint brand when the real culprit was a clogged gutter 3 feet above the peak. You have to look at the whole system, not just the flake. So I'm looking at your project right now. You've got the chalk, you've got the carbide scraper, and you've got the grit. But look at where that peeling is most aggressive. Is it concentrated around the windows, or is it happening in random clusters in the middle of the wall? If it's around the windows, your flashing is the problem. If it's in the middle of the wall, your interior's humidity is the problem. You have to decide if you're fixing a symptom or curing the disease. When you finish, clean your brushes until the water runs clear. Then clean them again. A good brush is an investment in your sanity. Flip your carbide blades so they're ready for the next section. Tools are an extension of your judgment, and you can't make good judgments with a blunt instrument. Now, I have to ask you something, and be honest with yourself. When you see that paint curling on your eaves, do you think it's just a cosmetic nuisance that can wait another season? Or do you recognize it as a structural emergency? Some say it's just a house, and paint is just a color, while others know that a single neglected flake is the beginning of a total collapse. Was my feathering failure 15 years ago a result of being a lazy contractor? Or was it a necessary mistake that every real pro has to make once to actually respect the craft? Be safe, and until next time on Torque and Tape.